Welcome to a predictive 137th episode of the Nerdstravaganza podcast, where we divine divinely every year. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Cam.
And tonight we will be making some predictions about what's going to happen in, I guess, our nerdy world in the coming year. Really, predictions about things that interest us. You can probably guess that that revolves around gaming, movies, etc. But let's not take any guesses until we get into tonight's topic. Let's instead talk about things with which we are already intimately and fully familiar with our Weekly Geekly, Geekly Weekly Roundup. And Cam, why don't you go first, man? What you been up to?
Oh boy, had a nice week. It was New Year's last year. I went out of town. I went up north to a nice resort in Palm Coast. I spent some time up there and just enjoyed the beach and, you know, New Year's and fireworks and all that good stuff. Came back this weekend, had a good time gaming. We had our game night on Thursday night. Even though it was New Year's Day, we still, the true diehards were still there. I only stopped by for a little bit, but I didn't want to break the streak. Did some gaming Sunday night at the Falcon Pub. Saturday, just sort of took it easy, just sort of wrapping up and getting ready because I'd taken time off work over the last week or two and, had to start back after this past weekend. So, that was it. Just spent some time getting ready to get back to reality and gaming and played through some of the video games I got for Christmas. And that's about it for me.
Okay, Brian, what about you?
It was a week of new games for me, despite having just recently attended the Play All Your New Games Fest. Everyone decided to bring new games last week instead. So I played Hot Tin Roof, which it's basically Aristocats, which I thought was awesome. It's set in Paris, and your goal is to roam the rooftops of Paris scrounging for sardine cans and paying other cats tribute if you use their rooftops. Really cute game. And it has cat meeples in it, which I thought was awesome. And then Saturday, I got called up to play Battle of Westeros, which I thought was going to be like a Game of Thrones game. Well, I mean, I thought it was going to be a game very similar to the game Game of Thrones. It is clearly Game of Thrones themed, but it's a lot more in depth than that. And I hear it's a lot like Memoir 44 and Dead of Winter, which now makes me want to play those games.
Dead of Winter is killer.
Definitely more interested in playing that now that I played a game that it is reportedly similar to. I had a lot of fun with this. It was a little on the plain side, I guess, because it was basically like Starks versus Lannisters in one fight. And I had my sights set on a massive brawl for the middle of the continent. But it was still very good. And once I adjusted to, this is more win a battle than win a war, it was definitely a great game.
I've played both games, actually. I think you'll enjoy Memoir 44. It is a little bit of a different experience. Things are more, how can I put this? They're more stratified than they are with, Lord of the Battle for Westeros. Battle of Westeros is a little bit more like a war game on a map. And Memoir 44 kicks it kind of back towards being a little bit more board game-ish.
Well, I'm willing to give either of those a chance if anyone's interested. And finally, I think Tom will be pleased to hear this. I wrapped up a painting project for a friend / fellow podcaster, Minky, the gender in question elf, is complete.
You do not think that Mickey the figurine is a female?
I'm pretty sure this is a male figure, but you can use your imagination.
Mickey is supposed to be a girl, so oh well.
Hipster flat girl, maybe.
Sure, sure. Awesome. The real-life Minky will be pleased to hear that the figurine representation of Minky is complete.
I'm looking forward to hearing her thoughts.
You will, I'm sure. Awesome, man. Is that rounded out for you?
That's enough for me.
Okay, I think that means it is Chris's turn.
Well, for my Geeky Weekly, it was really geeky. I lost too much time goofing off with TV tropes. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that website, but it's a great website that basically hits all the tropes in literature and in TV. And it's more like you can kind of guess where those tropes, what those tropes are when you hear the title, but I still like to click on them to see exactly if I'm right and what kind of, you know, related tropes are connected to that. You could just waste a whole day going through that website. And in addition to that, played some Mice and Mystics with the girlfriend. For someone who says she doesn't like role-playing games, she definitely likes moving little mouse-like figures on the board to go kick the ass of rats and roaches in a very dungeoneering-style game.
Who doesn't?
And on top of that, that inspired me to try to get my girlfriend into a full-fledged role-playing game. And I went through a lot of different websites and stuff trying to find that right mix because she wants something short. She doesn't like to spend more than 4 hours on any one game at all. And, of course, you know, with role-playing games, you can go 6 to 8 hours if you really want to keep pushing it. And she likes figures, and she likes, you know, visuals to see. She doesn't like to do what we call theater of the mind, where you're talking out the whole thing, including the combat.
Chris, have you ever played Agents of Smersh?
No, I haven't played. It sounds intriguing, though.
I'm thinking maybe she would like more of a, instead of a role-playing game, maybe a storytelling game, tabletop type, you know, one of those hybrid tabletop role-playing games. Agents of Smersh is one of them. There's several of them, but I actually backed the Kickstarter for the newest version of Agents of Smersh. Maybe we'll try that out when it comes in.
Yeah, sure. We'll drag her along and, hey, we'll see what happens.
I might jump in on that just because of the name.
Oh, and the name's great, too, of course.
Yeah.
And that pretty much wraps it up for me.
All right. Then I will round things out by saying that I have been feverishly collecting the Nintendo Amiibos, the little figures that they put out that interface with the Wiimote. They just have little IR thingies in them, and they get read in and do different stuff with different games. Of course, Nintendo either didn't print certain ones or didn't anticipate the demand for them, so now there are a bunch of like eBay squatters who are buying them up and then selling them at a high markup. I am collecting them feverishly, as I indicated, but I am not so fevered that I am going to pay a penny over retail. I don't care about these enough to reward somebody for doing that. I am enjoying them. They're actually really high quality, and it's cool to see what they unlock in the games that I have for my Wii U. So that's been fun. In addition, my Christmas bounty has inspired me to play through some of my backlog, so I've been trying to tear through some of my games. I've been playing Final Fantasy XIII-2 on the PS3. My friend Nick and I, who you guys will know, he's a Nerdtravaganza alum, have been playing the Final Fantasy X HD Remix, also on the PS3. That's going to be a co-project we're working on together. Playing a little Hyrule Warriors on the Wii U, and playing through Mario 3D World, which is not a brand new game, but still one I've been meaning to get to, also on the Wii U. So doing a lot of video gaming, and didn't make the last game night, but I'm looking forward to the next one, just because of the titles I'm hearing thrown around.
Tom, how's Hyrule Warriors?
Hyrule Warriors is every bit a Dynasty Warriors game with a lot of really cool Zelda elements basically bolted on. So if you like a Dynasty Warriors type game or a 99 Nights or something like that, and you like Zelda, it's perfect. If you don't like either of those things or both, maybe skip it. Honest advice.
Yeah, I mean, I love Zelda. I'm just wondering if it's like, you know, like you said, a Dynasty game with just a Zelda skin. I mean, is it really a Zelda game, or is it just a dressed up game dressed up to look like Zelda, a little bit of Zelda?
It has a lot of Zelda elements, I think. The story, such as it is pretty Zelda intensive, and there are different modes that involve... that at least seem to bring you a little into the Zelda universe. It's a very shallow tour of Zelda, I would say, but like all the enemies and everything are all straight out of that universe. You are fighting as Link, Impa, Zelda, different characters. And there does seem, at least the mode I'm playing, does seem to have a story to it. So I would not say, and I do not think Nintendo would claim that this is a Zelda proper by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. But if you like Zelda, this feels like a Zelda game, but it plays like a Dynasty Warrior. So it's got the look, feel, sound, everything of a Zelda game with a Dynasty Wars set of mechanics to it. Gotcha. If that makes sense.
Gotcha. And I gave up on Final Fantasy a long time ago, but I guess I'm not... it strikes me as funny that it's Final Fantasy 13 2. Wouldn't that just be Final Fantasy 14?
Or... Right.
That's another episode.
So, starting with Final Fantasy 10, they decided to do Final Fantasy 10 and 10-2, and now with Final Fantasy 13, they have done 13-1, 13-2, and 13-3, and I hope that's not a trend, but yeah, we could do a whole episode on Final Fantasy, and it probably would be a really entertaining one, because Brian and I could just dump so much knowledge on you that you probably never wanted to have dumped on you.
After the failure that was Infinite Undiscovery and, although not theirs, Last Odyssey, they just completely gave up on calling anything, however unrelated to Final Fantasy, anything but Final Fantasy. There's no reason for 10 to be a Final Fantasy. There's no reason for 13 to be a Final Fantasy. They should be other series.
Name recognition, man. That's how people get elected, even though they're dead.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? That's how anything gets made in Hollywood anymore. Unless you're Marvel.
We definitely need to devote an episode to Final Fantasy. Let's pledge to do that now and then move forward, I think.
Like I said, I left it behind a long time ago, but I'm happy to bone up on it and jump in with you guys.
We'll drag you back in. But before we move on to the topic, I think you guys might want to drag me into the real world, of which I no longer consider myself a part, and let me know what's going on in it with our news extravaganza segment. And who wants to go first? Who went first in the weekly, Cam?
That was me. Yeah. Okay. I'll go first. Let's see. My weekly Sony bagging. We'll take a back seat to actually some good news for them. They just launched their. They unlocked their unlimited play. PlayStation Now, I guess, is the brand that they're using with their Gaikai technology. And with your PS4, you can now stream over 100 PS3 games through your PS4. I think they're still sort of finding their way in terms of a subscription service and how they want to structure the price points and stuff like that. Right now, you can get a month of unlimited play for $19.99 or 3 months for $44.99, which, you know, breaks that down to about $15 a month. Like I said, right now you can only get that through the PS4, but as we've talked about in previous episodes, Samsung has bought into the whole Gaikai system, so pretty soon you'll be able to start streaming those games through your Samsung TVs, and Sony has also pledged that you'll be able to do that through pretty much any other Sony device, eventually. Who knows when, but eventually. So they're taking big strides towards the streaming solution for video games, which, you know, only spells a little bit more doom for the consoles, as we sort of discussed in last week's episode. I know we love our smartphones, guys, right? I know I am an Apple guy. I know some of you guys are Android guys, but Microsoft has come out with a smartphone for $29. The biggest feature that it has is that it has a 29 day standby battery life, which is pretty amazing. And like I said, for only $29, it's pretty hard to go wrong. It's a Nokia 215 is the model. Speaking of Apple, even though I am an Apple guy, I have no problem bagging on them when they blunder. And this is actually a gripe I've had with Apple for quite a while. Even though I am an attorney, I've never gone so far as to file a lawsuit, but apparently some people in California decided to. They are claiming that because iOS 8 takes up so much space on their devices or on their phones, their claims of, you know, the gigabyte claims that they have, you know, when you go and you buy a new phone, oh, you're getting 16 gigs, you're getting 32 gigs or whatever it is. They filed a lawsuit that their advertising is misleading because iOS 8 takes up so much space that they're only left with, like, on a 16 gig phone, I think you're only left with barely 11 gigs after iOS and all the other software is already, you know, that's been installed is on there. So they've started a class action lawsuit against Apple for that. And that about rounds up my news.
I've got some comments. One, that $29 smartphone doesn't sound too bad because I'm over smartphones. I just am not at all excited about them anymore. Like, no new announcements from either the Android or Apple camp excite me anymore. I think I was an early adopter of the iPhone. I got the first-gen iPhone and just kind of got burnt out on it really quickly. So that sounds great. And then on the other hand, it seems like there's some merit to that. If you're selling me a thing with so much capacity, but then telling me I can only use a certain percentage of that capacity and have it be of any use to me, that seems a little misleading, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, if you are usually buying a $30 smartphone, I have to tell you that that is part of your landscape, at least up till now. I mean, I've done, you know, kind of the prepaid plan, and smartphones have gotten down to $30 for Android, but if you do that, yeah, you're pretty much knowing that you've got nothing left on that phone. And 11 gigs would actually be awesome on those kind of phones.
I won't join any kind of a lawsuit suing somebody to selling me a $30 phone, but if you're selling me a several hundred dollar phone that I'm paying for either directly or through a subsidized
contract
purchase, that involves a two-year contract or what have you, then that's going to be different, you know, because in that case, I'm paying a pretty penny and I expect what's advertised. A 32 gig phone should give me something somewhere close to 32 gigs of usable space, not, you know, 26 after they load it up with their stuff.
Right.
I will comment on the PlayStation Network, well the PlayStation Now news, because I'm super excited by that. And because I have seen the strangest complaint pop up around it. Right now, it's about 100 games. Well, they say it's 100 plus, and obviously some of those are going to be stinkers, but I don't think they're going to add more games and change the price. So I think this is what we can expect to pay when they have 500, 1,000 games on it. And for some reason, people are outraged. $15 a month is outrageous. I wouldn't pay more than 10 for that. And I'm blown away by the difference $5 will make to someone.
Right. Considering what you spend $15 a day on, probably.
Or how much those games would cost individually.
That's such a funny phenomenon. People are so penny wise and dollar foolish. Like, it always amazes me, especially it usually crops up when it's gas prices. You know, gas prices will go up 20 cents and that, you know, even a big uptick is only maybe, you know, 20, 30 bucks a month. It really to the average person in an increase, but it's like, oh, we're so up in arms about this. But yet you'll go and you'll spend $8 on a latte at Starbucks, you know, per day. It's not even per month, you know. So, I don't understand that, especially if you look at Gamefly, which is, I guess, the only thing that's would be close to it, except for maybe Redbox rentals. But, I mean, I believe Gamefly is at least that, if not more. I've not checked the prices on Gamefly in a while, but it's got to be close.
I thought this service was going to be like $25 a month.
Yeah, 15 seems pretty reasonable for what you're getting, which is access to the entire back catalog. Eventually, we're assuming at some point, of PlayStation titles, right?
That's
right.
Kind of the promise.
Yeah, that's pretty huge. I mean, I don't really see that as cost prohibitive or not a good value proposition. Just goes to show you cannot please gamers, man.
Nope.
Well, I just quickly went to Gamefly. $16 a month for Gamefly, and that's for one game that you have to, like, get in the snail mail. you know, get through the mail and then send back at a time. This is over 100 games for $15 a month, and you can play every single game every day if you wanted to.
Right, on demand. Like, you know, yeah. Something strikes my, you know, the mood strikes me to play this. Boom, there it is.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's a great deal.
It sounds like the Netflix of games, basically.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
It is, and mind you, what is Netflix per month? Something like $8 or $9 just by itself?
It's 16 if you get both versions. It's eight a piece or maybe nine a piece now.
Yeah, and then most people usually complement that with Hulu, so you're at the same price, and nobody complains about that. So, strange.
Right.
Well, any other news, Cam?
That wraps up my news extravaganza for the week.
Okay. Who else has some hot news off the presses?
I will be terribly selfish and mention that it may not be world news, but we have hit 600 likes on Facebook, which was
nice.
A pretty long-term goal. I think it took us about a year to get from 5 to 6.
Yeah, that was, hey man, it's growth. We'll take it. 600, we're going to hit that magic number of 1,000, and then we're pretty much going to be paid by Facebook just to exist. So yes. We're looking forward to that.
It's all exponential growth after that, right?
So we hope.
Toes and fingers crossed.
And though it may not be geeky and I may not have a, what do you say, dog in this race, I will take a moment to mention that Florida has legalized gay unions, which I think is just great. I think that deserves a moment of our time.
Yeah, kudos to Florida. I mean, we're such a red state, but I think that's a quantum leap forward in terms of social justice.
Oh yeah, guys, what's next? Now what? I'm going to go marry a lamp or a desk.
I am looking forward to my marriages with several attractive women now. That is the foot in the door. I will be able to marry as many as I wish.
Do you think that polyamory will be the next frontier in liberalization of sexual regulation, I guess, or romantic regulation?
I think it's in the batter's box. I think transgender acceptance will be the next hot button.
I don't know. Personally, for me, I've got too much going on in my life to put my nose in other people's business.
Yeah. And, I mean, you can already go to Utah and, you know, shack up with as many women as you want. And I can say that because my mother
not
is...
legally.
I can say that okay without reservation because my mother is a Mormon. So I feel I have the moral right to say that. No, but, you know, you bring up a good point, Tom. You know, I think that there's a saying, I think it's... Actually, scratch that. I don't want to say that. It's probably not good for the podcast.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The wonders of editing.
I don't want to put my foot in my mouth.
Can't go on record with that one, huh?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, well, I'll just say this on the topic and my final remark on it. I think that this is a long time in coming. I mean, on one hand, people who were against gay marriage were like, well, once that domino falls, then so will all these others. But on the other... I mean, should the state really be in the business of discrimination? It's not like these people are asking for anything more than anybody else enjoys, right?
I agree. And if we, you know, are serious about having a secular state, then, you know, what business is it of the government?
Yep. Agreed.
Wait, it may have taken 35 leading states to get us to do it, but at least we did it.
Hey, we're not last.
Yeah,
we're
exactly. Not last. Exactly. I'm sure Texas will probably round out that list, but, you know, guys, one more thing I forgot to mention, and I know it's not, I will make the stretch of it being geek related because I consider fantasy sports to be geek related. But this is sort of a sports related issue. And, you know, even though I am a huge nerd and a huge geek, I also do like sports. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the guy, Stuart Scott, who is a longtime ESPN anchor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he passed away yesterday. And, you know, it just came to mind when we were talking about this whole, you know, equality
thing with marriage and stuff like that. He was one of the first African Americans to really make inroads into the sort of lily white sports casting world. And not only that, but then sort of started injecting his own take on the culture and, you know, African American culture and the hip hop culture and stuff like that. He was the one that started with the booyah. You know, he would say that in the highlights, or, you know, he'd like quote rap lyrics, or you know, he'd say, oh, you know, makes the shot as cool as the other side of the pillow, you know, things like that. And he just sort of really revolutionized sports casting. I am an ESPN fan, and I was a big fan of his, so it's sad to see him go.
Young fellow too, wasn't he?
I believe he was 49.
Just wow, like, yeah.
Crap.
Yeah, he was cancer. He battled cancer for many years, several times.
Was any regular CNN commenter or contributor?
He might have been, but I mean, he was on ESPN for 21 years. It was his 21st year this year, and he or would have been his or 21st year last year, and sad to see him go.
I'm going to make a quick digression, by the way, from a comment you had, Cam. Geeks can't be brainiacs anymore, just to let you know. I mean, the way I've seen things, especially with the younger crowd, is you can't be just a geek for comic books and stuff. It's sports. It's everything. My son was like trying to be kind of like, oh, I'm the brainiac, and jocks are evil. And I'm like, kid, you're not paying attention. You know, we've gone so mainstream that, you know, it's just not the guy in the corner with glasses being the wallflower anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's so many now subtypes, and, you know, we could do 10 shows on that. I think, you know, I know there's a past episode that you guys did, Tom and Brian, on this whole thing. But, you know, regardless, I think whatever you like, and if you're a geek for sports, great, you know. I wouldn't discriminate you against you just because you like sports. Or call you a jock and, you know, get out of here. But
I may have said it before, but I guess I'll say it again today. I've always associated geekdom with just, like, a huge passion for something, with geeking out over something. So if you want to geek out over touchdown passes, you're a geek. I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't believe that really any form of entertainment or any sort of cultural elements are necessarily mutually exclusive. And I'll point to an example in our very own sort of extended family. Brian, the proprietor of the Adventure Game Store, kind of our headquarters, is also a pretty big sports fan. At least football, I think he's into, right?
Oh, more than that. He's football, Marlins. He even has one of the original hockey sticks that was on the Panthers ice enshrined in his place.
So there you go. This is a guy who has made a career in, I guess we could say, geeky pursuits, but, you know, he's got a whole other side of him that's a sports nut. And, you know, the stereotype would be that if you're into tabletop games, you wouldn't be into that. And I don't think that applies anymore. And I think that's a good thing. I think we're going away from making bad assumptions about people based on their sexuality and making any assumptions about people based on their hobbies. So... yay for the bright new future starting in this year, 2015.
Yes, that encourages me to come out of the closet as a closet sports fan.
That's okay, we accept you.
I appreciate that, guys.
Cool, so does that round up... let's see, who is that, Brian that time around? Yeah, okay. Chris, do you have any news to report?
Yeah, I got, I think, three things. The first one is that rumors are abounding that... a certain writer is starting to actually pen the scripts for his reboot of his previous project, Babylon 5.
Oh,
wow.
Huh.
So I don't want to say his last name because I know I'm going to butcher it. Starts with an S.
Spabylon, isn't it?
But yeah, you know, what I've heard, he would like some of the previous actors to come back, those that are still alive. You know, probably more for cameos and actually, you know, doing their previous, roles or coming in as a different role. But yeah, he said it was more of a reboot than an actual continuation or reimagining. Second thing, I thought it was an interesting comment. I read an article where they were talking about how kind of crazy things have gotten with offending and not offending, and how how dare you take offense to me offending you sort of internet life that's going on lately. And one of the stories the article talked about was how this person, a transgender individual, was playing Cards Against Humanity. Anybody here not know that game?
Well, I know it well.
Yeah, it's a game designed to shock and offend people. So already you're kind of walking into the hot kitchen there. And basically he posted a picture of him burning a card that offended him because he was transgender. And that made everybody else on the internet go, oh, this is an offensive game. Well, yes, we already know it's an offensive game. The creator of the game even apologized to this individual going, oh, now that I'm a little older, I can understand where that would be offensive and I apologize. And then that transgender individual had to apologize to everyone else because everyone else said, wait a minute, you were offended by that one card? What about all the other cards in there that offend everybody else? Why are you still playing the game? Out of just the sheer principle. And I thought that was kind of telling.
It's always different when it's you.
Yes, yes. I think when some people say they want something to be more inclusionary, they're not thinking of the word in its literal sense. They're thinking of a much more narrowly defined idea of what inclusionary means. And, you know, you got to kind of take it at face value. One of the things I'm really proud about in America is that, you know, a whole bunch of rich farmers said, you know, all men should be created equal, and then we made them literally take their word for it and expanded upon that in over 200 years.
Yeah, it took 200 years to get to the point where we've almost maybe realized that, but yeah, at least they said the words.
You know, Chris, that it's just a huge pet peeve of mine. I mean, the name of the game is Cards Against Humanity. I mean... It's like, okay, if you don't want to watch midget porn, then don't Google it and click the link, you know? But if someone else out there wants to watch midget porn, so be it. Have fun, you know? It's like, why are you playing that game if you know that it's an offensive game, and then you're going to play it and then be, like, shocked that you got offended by it? Like, come on. That's a huge pet peeve of mine.
Did this individual come around to realize that you said it was he had too thin a skin?
Well, that's part of the whole question we're going to have to ask, right? Is where on this line are people who are being offended truly being offended, or are they just easily offended and happen to be in a target group that needs more representation? Compared to some jerk who's, you know, basically defending and hiding his racism and his judgmentality behind, hey, man, I have First Amendment rights.
Mm.
You know, so, but yeah, I mean, the levels of irony in that story, from like the idiocy of jumping out of the frying pan into the fire and then realizing that you're getting burned.
Sometimes I feel like, and I speak as somebody who's not part of any of these groups, people who are in a traditionally oppressed group are almost obligated to be thin-skinned and reactionary. That's just what it seems like from my point of view. And having known people of different sexual orientations, a lot of people who are in those, I'll say, quote-unquote, victim groups or oppressed groups aren't really as thin-skinned as they're supposed to be all the time. And I don't know. I mean, I don't even know what the nature of this card was. Maybe this was just abominable and, you know, I'm making light of it and where I shouldn't be. But I guess hopefully when we get to a better place in this country and in this society where people are presumed to be on equal footing, we'll see a lot less of this sort of thing. But, we're not there yet. And so this kind of thing, I think, is going to continue to come up.
Yeah, I agree that this story is an example of the growing pains that we have to kind of go through to get there.
Yeah.
Well, and it's exactly. And it's like meta upon meta upon meta. I mean, how far do you want to take it? You know, like, I mean, I'm a minority, you know, but I feel like if you are a minority or an oppressed group or however you want to frame it, you should know better. I mean, if you are a victim of bias or prejudice or bigotry, then how can you then in good conscience do the same thing to someone else? You can't claim, equality and we all should be the same, but then get pissed at someone else when they don't share the same views that you do. even though they might be ignorant or, you know, what most people might think as backwards or stupid, well, they still have the same right to have their beliefs that you do. So, you know, and you should know better because you've been getting hit with that for your whole life.
Yep.
I mean, that's at least, you know, how I approach things.
I'll say this, and Brian said it, it's different when it's you, and
right.
Maybe this speaks to how similar we all really are at the end of the day, but, you know, the gay guy down the street might be racist. The anti-racist activist down the street might be a homophobe. Like, it's really strange that people can seek justice down certain avenues, but completely be opposed to it down others. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then my third bit of news is more on the local front. Brandon Sanderson, the author of the final books for Wheel of Time, and the Mistborn series, as well as the young adult novels that are coming out, The Steelheart, is going to be in Miami on Thursday.
Oh.
And I'm debating whether I want to go or not. Mostly because, you know, when you've done as much, you know, research and an effort as I have, going to writers' conferences and being in workshops and stuff, going to just get your book signed, I mean, unless you really, really worship the person, and even I wasn't that much when I was like Neil Gaiman's book signing, I still would rather have spent time talking to him about the craft and stuff, and that's just not going to be really doable. You know, I'm sure that he already has something planned with some fans or with another local writer or two he may know after the event. So me just coming in, I'd be kind of like a third wheel, so I don't know. I'm trying to balance that between maybe doing that and hoping I get the outside chance of getting in there and just talking to them professional to professional or professional to, you know, wannabe when it comes to fiction or just, you know, kicking back with you guys on game night.
He's doing a book signing, Chris?
Yes, yes. It's for a sequel for his Steelheart series, young adult superhero. The setup is the world has changed. There are super-powered people. We wouldn't call them superheroes. And he is a guy without superpowers who's going to take on the biggest and the baddest because he has a personal vendetta against the guy.
Man, I wouldn't get my hopes up in that because he's probably going to have an onslaught of fans demanding his attention. And then as much as he might even like to connect with you on a professional level, I think he's going to be too hairy. That's just my read and my advice. Ben, I'm not a writer, but that's what I'm throwing your way.
Yeah, yeah. I'm leaning towards that way myself, which is why I'm, you know, otherwise if I wasn't like leaning that heavily that way, I would have been like, oh, I'm going.
Mm. But, plus game, you know, night. Game night.
Yeah, it's game night, yeah. If I had some way to contact him and say, hey, because, you know, I mean, just a moment of humble brag. I was one of the readers for David Brin. I don't know if that author rings a bell with you guys.
Mm.
He was kind of big in the 90s and the 80s. I mean, he was down here with Robert J. Sawyer. Robert J. Sawyer's book, Flash Forward, became that little short TV series.
That was actually really, I liked that show a lot, actually, and then it got canceled.
Yeah, unfortunately. You know, I had a little dinner with them. They were down here for a cruise, and they said, hey, Chris, you know a place we can eat and bring some friends? And we did.
Brian, you're a writer. What's your advice to Chris?
I would probably skip it. Unless you do know the guy and unless it's planned ahead or whatever, it's probably going to be like a very crowded cluster. And unfortunately, Sanderson has a reputation for prolific signings, so you couldn't even eBay it for very much.
Well, eBaying wasn't even my thing, but if he has prolific signings, then evidently he's going to have a long line of people there.
Yeah.
And thanks to an earlier online promotion, I actually have one of his books already signed, Steelheart. And funny enough, I haven't really read it yet, but I just recently started Mistborn, and just it's too funny. Maybe it's a star in the sky, maybe it's a scary sign. But I was talking to my girlfriend about it, and it turned out that she also picked up Mistborn, and she's also reading it. We didn't even plan it that way.
Planetary alignment is much more likely than an Amazon sale.
And I am getting the sneaking suspicion that planetary alignment will be required before we can get into tonight's segment.
Yes, yes, that's true.
Topic, I should say. Chris, did you have anything else to add before we segued hastily into that?
Not that I can, no, not that I can think of.
All right, well, let us know if you go meet the chap. If you're not at game night, we'll know why. And with that said, I think we can jump right into tonight's topic, which is, and I think we alluded to it a little bit earlier, some predictions for 2015, some things we're looking forward to in 2015 in the realm of entertainment, geek entertainment, or really anything else that comes to mind. If you're a huge sports fan, I guess you could talk about some big game, but my eyes will be told, you won't be able to see my eyes as they glaze over. Fair warning. So, Chris, you kind of had the floor, and I think I'll let you keep it. You want to go first? Do you have a big prediction for something that's going to really revolutionize 2015?
Well, first I'm going to predict that they've already beat it into the ground that 2015 is also the year that Marty McFly came to the future.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
You know, we wanted hoverboards. We were hoping for them, self-tying shoelaces. What did we get instead? We got Segways.
Well,
not even a fair trade.
Well, Chris, the self-tying shoelaces are supposed to be out this year on the new Nike McFlys. They're coming out in the middle of this year, I believe. So those should be available this year, but I don't know how long it'll take for the hoverboard to come out.
Well, technically they already had one out, but I saw the video for it, but I don't know how that really works. And it didn't look like it was really hovering that fast.
I think that might have been a fake. Yeah.
I looked into that hoverboard. It actually requires that you be over a metal surface because it works with rotating magnets. It's not very practical for day-to-day use yet.
I can't grind on that yet?
No. But I will say that the one thing that also hasn't come to be, and I guess we kind of already crossed this bridge with the AOL discs a few years ago. If you pay attention, there's a scene where they're in like a back alley and there's all this garbage laying around. And there are these pallets full of discarded laser discs and CDs.
Yeah, yes.
The thinking, I guess, was that media would be delivered on those in such quantities that would be like a huge source of e-waste. Well, AOL contributed mightily to that, but that's all done long before 2015, I'm afraid.
Absolutely.
That must have been the recycling center they were behind.
Yeah, it didn't look like it. Just pallets of trash, but maybe. Could have been.
or maybe that's where they put all the extra E.T. stuff.
Yeah, no, that was the part when Marty went in and got the gray sports almanac in the alley
right.
there.
Right.
But yeah, that's one of my favorite movie franchises, and I'm glad that we're talking about it. I think that, you know, it's funny how some things that did come true, Florida did get a baseball team, which
yeah.
Hadn't happened at that point yet.
Wasn't the Sharks though, right?
It was supposed to. It was something like the Florida Gators or something like that, I believe.
Yeah.
But you know, of course, they were the Florida Marlins and then now the Miami Marlins. But the whole hydration thing of like freeze dried food that never really caught on. It's funny that faxes now. I mean, I don't even know anyone who has a fax machine anymore. And that was like the
that's passe. But yeah, you know what? The 16 by 9 aspect ratio TV did catch on.
Yes,
that was true.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Yeah, it's funny to go back and see those things.
Well, you know, sometimes when I think of those old films, for me, it helps when I think about those what they're doing with those films as more of a. More metaphors. They're trying to describe what they think is going to be kind of relevant technology in the future. No, we don't have faxes everywhere, like in the bathroom and stuff, but how many times do you get a text or a tweet in the bathroom?
True. And
you can't escape that information. No, you don't have a huge screen. Actually, yes, we do have huge, giant screens now, don't we? With screen and everything else.
We do, and you can Skype on your Xbox, and we're Skyping right now to do this podcast, so that bit of telecommunication, like on-demand stuff, did come to pass, I think. We could totally be doing a video conversation right now if we chose.
That would be called Google Hangouts.
Yeah, but I mean, that, you know, that a lot of that did come to pass. The I kind of wanted those like hover shoes you could use to stretch your back out. Wasn't his dad using those at the beginning or something?
He was like upside down or something.
Yeah. Like, that seemed far-fetched even then. I don't know how they thought this technology was going to come to be, but
well, they have that. I don't know. You know, Brian and I suffer from late night insomnia, but they have this thing where you can get in this chair and it flips you upside down. I mean, it's a low-tech solution, but it's pretty much the same thing. and I think that they sell millions of those things. But to me, it's funny. It's like, is it art imitating life, or is it life imitating art? You know, I mean, if you want to even go back to, like, Star Trek and, all those old-school space shows, I mean, the tricorders, the communication devices, I mean, those were, unheard of back then in the 60s and 70s, and now everyone has a little handheld device that does everything.
It's been documented to death how Star Wars inspired a whole generation of engineers and scientists to make those things become a reality.
Yeah. Well, Jean-Luc Picard always had a Nook or a Kindle or an iPad, depending on how you want to look at it, in his hand, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Touché. Touché. All right, so two more things. I'm going to get into something actually more scientific and predictive for a moment. I think we're going to see one more amazing leap in bionics this year.
Oh.
Well, last year, or no, 2 years ago, there was the woman who could mentally move a robotic arm. She was totally paraplegic, and she had these huge blocks that they attached to her head. Just before the year closed out, there was a guy with two full bionic arms, and they said his rate of learning how to manipulate those arms was amazing. They were like, they didn't even expect him to do half the stuff he could do. And unfortunately, he had to give those arms back. So at this rate, I'm thinking there's going to be one more thing. Oh, one more thing before I forget. They even have a physical therapy bionic leg now. You strap it on your regular leg. You start walking, it greatly assists you, but then it starts to pull back its assistance so that it makes your real leg start working. So it's not like you're sitting on those little, two poles and trying to walk and hold on two poles. It lets you kind of walk your normal gait. So I think there's going to be one more crazy thing coming out in 2015 when it comes to bionics.
Maybe exoskeleton stuff or exoskeleton stuff for physical therapy, something along those lines?
Already, well, for physical therapy, not so much, but I mean, exosuits are already a reality. The problem is the power.
Yeah.
If we could find like a really awesome battery or a little fusion generator that you could, be the size of a large, huge, like encyclopedia style book, that could last for like 6 hours or 12 hours, it would revolutionize a lot of things. That's the big thing with a lot of this stuff is the power requirements.
Well, I would think for therapeutic purposes in a controlled environment, you could have it plugged in. You know what I mean? You could have it on a long cable and allow the patient to enjoy the assistance. But yeah, the battery, the portable power is an issue.
Well, fortunately or unfortunately, however you look at it, I mean, the military applications for this is really what's pushing that technology. I mean, they've had these exosuits for soldiers for years now. They just did a bunch of tests in Afghanistan last year. This year, all the predictions that I'm seeing is that, I mean, there will be a battle suit integrated into actual warfare or actual, combat companies there will be soldiers walking around in exosuits this year, I believe. And
wow.
that then drives the private applications. Like you said, Chris, they're the ones that are perfecting the battery technology and they have the super funding in terms of getting that stuff together and then applying it to private applications, as it sort of trickles down.
And then for me, the third thing is a little more back on the geeky side. I don't think they're going to be there yet, but I am looking forward to seeing the Google modular phones.
Oh, yeah. Those are maybe happening this year?
I thought they're supposed to come out this month, but I think they pushed it back to Q1.
Ah, okay.
And then for anybody who's listening who hasn't heard of them, the Google modular phones are just that. You can actually hot swap modular bits out of your phone and replace them if you want to, if you want a smaller external speaker and a bigger battery, then you just can swap those things out.
It's going to be collectible like Amiibos.
Yeah. It's the Mr. Potato Head of cell phones.
Right now, I think they're still going to be, I mean, the first adopters are going to have to be kind of forgiving. It's going to be basically a Wi-Fi phone. It's not going to be, as far as I know, they're still working out on how to do the SIM card module just for now.
See, I think that's going to crash and burn. I mean, I just don't see the practicality in it, especially with the size, weight. I mean, you can get pretty much anything you want in a phone, and it's almost disposable at this point, especially what we just talked about in the new Stravaganza with a $29 phone. I can't see then carrying around like all these, or having all these different attachments and modules and things that you have to slap together. It just doesn't seem very practical to me.
I'm a sucker for first steps. That'll be a cool first step towards like clothing. Like, instead of having to buy a new phone or whatever, you can just slap that module in the jacket for the day.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're going someplace where you need battery life, you know, an extended battery would make sense. And if you wanted to go take a bunch of photos, a really great camera module would make more sense. I don't know. It smacks of gimmickry, but they may surprise us. A lot of things I've scoffed at, and they turned out to be compelling. So I don't know. I share your skepticism, Cam, but I maybe am a little more optimistic that it'll be well received.
I share some of your skepticism, Cam.
I think
we'll either live or die on how a la carte it can be.
Yeah, and how much the a la carte thing matters to people, really, to Cam's point.
Yeah, I mean, my issue is, you know, when you get up in the morning and you get yourself together and you walk out the door, I mean, are you really going to sit there and be like, well, I'm going to go here, and so I really want to put this extra, you know, megapixel camera module onto my phone today, or, you know, I really need some extra battery life, so instead of just having an extra, you know, power cord at my office, I'm going to, you know, swap out this battery pack, or, you know, I don't know, just...
Well, I'm not going to use the condescending voice, but I would have.
I know it's nothing I would ever do, so...
I mean, put yourself, like, okay, me in the morning, I wake up, my little Hello Kitty alarm clock goes off, I pirouette out of bed, tee-hee, I want to wear pink today, and then I swap out all of the appropriate parts on my phone so it matches my outfit. I mean, maybe then it's compelling, right?
You know, you just changed my mind. We'll see. Time will, like you said, I've made plenty of bad predictions, but this one I think I'm pretty safe on.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see.
Hey, I admit it could go either way.
Chris, did you have any more, or should I pass the baton on over to someone else?
Oh, please pass on the baton.
All right, who wants to go next?
I am really looking forward to a bunch of 3D printing patents expiring. I think this is the year we see... First off, it's becoming cheaper, it's becoming more common, but I really think we're going to see the breadth of applications.
So 3D printing is going to become more affordable by virtue of the fact that a lot of the patents are expiring, and so people will be able to manufacture 3D printers, right?
I don't even think it's necessarily going to become more affordable. I think more variety is going to become more affordable. Things that the MakerBot can't do right now, it's going to be able to do because that patent was lifted.
Oh, I see. So they'll now have the freedom to implement these at present restricted features. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I agree with you, Brian. And that's one of the... I think we talked in a previous episode when we were talking about our Christmas list. I took that off my list because I wanted to wait for this year to see, you know, what would come out.
I wanted to say something about 3D printers, but I didn't really, you know, I didn't know that news, so I was like, something big 3D is going to happen. I just didn't know what.
This is a big year, just legally. There's all kinds of patents that are, of course, secret, but they're set to expire. So, I mean, we might be getting amino strand printers for food or whatever.
I'm sorry, Tom. Go ahead.
Sorry. So you're basically predicting that 2015 is a big year for 3D printing.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you're right. I definitely hope you're right.
And to sort of bring it back to the Star Trek analogy we talked about earlier, maybe replicators for the amino strand, right?
It could be anything. It could be, you know, cloth, like actual spools used on printers for the clothing. It could be protein paste or amino strands. I think it's going to be a very exciting time.
I hope you're right, man. I hope this ushers in a new era of 3D printing. I think, man, that's exciting. That's an exciting idea to ponder.
Yeah, I mean, what blew my mind was an article I read. It was probably like a year ago, but they legitimately believe, you know, and when I say they, I mean the scientific community, legitimately believe that within 5 to 10 years, you'll be able to go into an operating room and have them just print you up a kidney. And, you know, put it, you know, it'll eliminate the need for donors for most organs. I mean, you know, 5 or 10 years may be a bit optimistic, but I mean, if that's even 20 years on the horizon, I mean, that's amazing.
We're going to live forever, guys.
We'll see. I hope so, I guess. I would like to see what happens forever from now.
if they attain printable hearts, I mean, there's nothing else that really kills us. Violence, but
yeah.
We stay indoors. We avoid most of the violence.
Bad in cancer.
Yeah.
That's my temptation for immortality, is that I want to see how it ends.
Yes, yes.
I want to see the end of the big story.
Well, I'm not even worrying about my body. I just want my modular phone to be able to download my consciousness into, so I can, you know, swap out different parts of my personality.
Oh my gosh, we're veering into one of my favorite topics, so we better steer clear.
Oh, as a side note, by the way, guys, Cory Doctorow, a science fiction writer, wrote a book called Makers, and it was about the Makers/3D printer revolution.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he also wrote Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom.
Oh, okay. I've heard of that. Rick, another Nerdstravaganza alum, has, I think, gifted me that book at least once.
Yeah, he's a real big information must be free sort of guy. I think his day job is that he's the director of some sort of foundation that's their motto. So even though he sells things and Amazon sells his stuff and he's got traditional publishers, he puts a lot of his stuff on his website for free at craphound.com.
Craphound.com. Okay.
I'm not making that up.
And I believe I saw Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom available there recently.
Yeah, it's always been there. That was his thing on the internet, back when the internet was exploding. He did this whole world where basically your internet reputation was literally your standing and your money. If you had a great internet reputation, then a lot of things came to you free, or people did you a lot of favors, quid pro quo sort of thing. Or, you know, if you were a jerk and nobody liked you, then, you know, maybe you were lucky to live under a bridge.
Interesting. So he is definitely occupying a mansion in that world.
Yeah. And of course, his predictions, I guess in a metaphorical sense, some of them came true. But, you know, we're not all working in Disney World, because that's where we want to be, and that's what excites us.
Mm. So we've got some pretty interesting predictions so far for 2015. Cam, have you made a bold prediction apart from some Back to the Future related stuff?
You know, all mine sort of have to do with doom and gloom. I'm a little salty today, I guess, with my predictions. You know, we talked about the exoskeleton suits and stuff like that. I think we're going to see a huge proliferation in that militarily. We're going to see an even larger proliferation of drone technology, unfortunately. I think that, you know, I don't know how, you know, in between the four of us, you know, I don't know how smart, quote unquote our homes are, but you know, most of the you know, I'm in sort of the real estate business, and I see a lot of the new homes that are being built. Many of them are being built with all the smart home technology. I think at some point, either this year or next year, there's going to be a pretty large panic over the smart home technology because of its security breaches. I think it's going to be fairly simple for a lot of information to be stolen that way. And so that is going to cause, I think that's going to cause an issue. Google Glass sucks. I guess I'll end with that. And I hope it continue to suck for 2015. Yes.
Oh, that's bad. That's bad. Okay.
Shooting for the low bar on that one, weren't you?
Yeah.
Okay. I could go down the dark road, and step away from geeky stuff and mention things like this. The current mania surrounding apparently cheap fossil fuels will only further move us down the road to wrong ways to generate energy, which is going to set us back when it comes to our awesome bright VR future. But I won't go down that road. Instead, I'll step away and talk about some entertainment coming out. I believe that 2015 is when The Legend of Zelda is coming out for the Wii U Entertainment System. And if you've not seen footage or screen caps of that particular game, it's really cool. And if anything will ever be a system seller, it will be that. Because people really do love Legend of Zelda, and that game looks fantastic.
Yeah, it looks sick. It might even prompt me to buy a Wii.
There you go. Wii. If it might even prompt you to buy a Wii, and can stay Brian for even a moment from... from denouncing the Wii, then there's hope for it. And Brian has not said anything, so...
God, if there was ever a more overrated series...
Really? Oh, man. Ouch. Speaking of salty, jeez.
Ouch. I know he's kidding, but... Yeah, Legend of Zelda should be really good for the Wii U. I'm also excited about where they're going to go with the amiibos and what impact those are going to have on games on that platform. And to step away from gaming altogether, I'm also kind of curious slash pretty excited slash pretty optimistic about where they're going to go with this Avengers Age of Ultron thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any thoughts on that? I mean, if you guys enjoy the Avengers movies, you think Marvel is just going to have another killer hit on their hands, or could they finally go off the rails?
I mean, I'd be surprised if they go off the rails on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a huge commercial success. Whether or not it will match the previous Avengers movie, I don't know. That one's pretty hard to top. I really enjoyed that movie.
Well, they're not stepping away from taking the gambles. They're going to introduce several new characters, and some of those characters may be taking over the reins as they retire a few of them out of the field.
Oh, cool.
I would love to be pessimistic about this. I was never all that excited about the Avengers before I saw the movie. Even when the movie was doing well, I was just kind of like, yeah, it looks good. I was really surprised at how good that movie is. I can't see them screwing it up.
Yeah, me too, man. I mean, even the individual Marvel superhero movies, even the bad ones, were still entertaining. And then everything culminated very nicely in Avengers. So, yeah, I definitely 100% share your optimism on that, Brian. I think we're in for a real treat with that movie.
The only dark spot I can think of is how that may impact the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV series, because we do know that them sitting on their haunches waiting for Winter Soldier to come so they could actually really get to the real plot of that TV series kind of hurt them in the beginning. And, you know, I guess it's just more of a, oh, this is another big change. It's going to impact the TV series. Is it going to be good? Is it going to be bad? Because, you know, right now they're on a really cool run, and they're getting into a lot of the stuff. It seems like to me that the S.H.I.E.L.D. series is actually kind of setting up the foundation of explaining where we're going with all of these other films after Avengers 2.
Well, then
there could be side effects, positive side effects is what I think I hear you saying, Chris, right?
Well, I'm more of just the, you know, it's a change. Are they going to still take the ball and run with it, or are they going to drop it? I'm kind of like...
Oh, I see.
Yeah, because, I mean, you go into spoiler territory here a little bit, guys?
No.
No. Yeah, I don't think we want to go that far.
Are you worried that they're going to defer too much to the movie and not...
Thor was kind of... Their connections to Thor was almost kind of a lame joke up until they started including, you know, Asgardian characters.
Hmm.
But their very first thing was just like, oh, we're cleaning up the site and it's a horrible day and we're going to do a mission on the site. It was kind of like, what? That was it? And then later on they included actual characters and that was kind of cool. But actually, you know what? I'm going to get into a little bit just so that people can get into, because we've got Sony, we've got Marvel, and we've got Fox, right? They all own Marvel characters.
Yeah.
All right, so thanks to Fox owning the X-Men and who else? Somebody else. They also somehow own the world or own the word mutants when it comes to talking about that universe.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Marvel can't talk about mutants, so they've had to come up with a backup plan. That
non-humans.
Yeah, the Inhumans. That's why I was talking about spoiler territory. Yeah, so now the Inhumans are going to be the mutants of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Okay. I thought they made peace, or at least came to some kind of understanding with regard to who could use whose stuff. Or was that just the Spider-Man camp?
Some of that was Spider-Man almost happened. And also on top of that, so that's where, like, between Avengers and also... X-Men, you've seen that the Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch are going to be in both franchises because somehow they fall in between. And that's why, both franchises, you're going to see two different versions of those two characters.
But 2015 could mark a tentative coming together, maybe, of the different rights holders in terms of cooperating and maybe bringing this universe together in a certain sense.
I don't see that, really. I just see everybody kind of trying to do their own little thing right now. They may change their mind. Oh, yeah, it would be great to have Wolverine in there hanging out with Iron Man. But
I was kind of hoping you would say that, because I understand there was some deal struck between... I forgot which two camps.
It was Spider-Man and Marvel got close.
So Sony and Disney, basically, who are the rights holders there... You say it got close, but didn't really strike a deal?
You know, it kind of dropped. And on top of that, that's why Sony is trying to do this whole, trying to pump up the Spider-Man mythologies, because they're trying to create a Spider-Verse. They're trying to do the same thing with one character in his mythology as compared to Marvel with their whole back catalog.
I don't like that necessarily.
That's why you saw these little teases in Spider-Man 2 of like the Doc Ock arms and the wings for Vulture and all that stuff, is they were going to do some sort of Sinister Six / Suicide Squad spinoff.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember seeing the Sinister Stick, pardon me, I remember seeing the Sinister Six setup, yes.
Yeah, and that's why, because they're like I said, they're trying to do this whole, make Spider-Man his own universe, and people are thinking, maybe you should just stick to Spider-Man.
Well, even that they botched, but that's okay.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I really want my wish prediction to come true, because they just keep messing things up with Spider-Man.
Yeah.
All right, let me ask you guys, let me gauge a little enthusiasm about this. What do you guys think about the Jurassic Park franchise? I believe it's this year. The Jurassic World is coming out. What do you think about that?
I mean, I like the kid that they cast for the main guy. He was the guy from Guardians of the Galaxy, right? Chris Pratt, yeah. I like him. I mean, so I think they made a good casting choice there. I never really was a huge, huge Jurassic Park fan. I mean, I liked the movies when they came out, but, so I'm not too excited about it.
It's hard for me to think of Jurassic Park as... a single IP, because the movies are just so different.
Right.
I mean, I've kind of enjoyed all of them, but, I mean, one does not feel like two, does not feel like three.
I didn't like Spinosaur at all, actually. I thought that was pretty bad. Yeah, I don't know. I liked them revisiting this and reopening the park. Because, like, you know, the whole thing is the park never really got open properly, and now it has, apparently, according to the trailer. So I'm curious to see how that all goes wrong, and a somewhat functional park then falls apart.
For me, I don't know. If I see this, I'm going to see it more as a Chris Pratt film than I'm going to see it as a Jurassic Park film, to be honest. I mean, I like that actor, Jurassic Park. I mean, the first was great, and then just kind of went downhill from there. And back in the day for Jurassic Park, I was kind of like the Game of Thrones fan. I was like, oh, this movie's going to be great. And they're like, what is this movie you're talking about? And I was like, I've read this awesome book. And then after the fact, everybody jumped on the Jurassic Park bandwagon.
And it didn't live up to the book from what people told
me. The first one was close, but and he even did a sequel. And I liked the theory he did in the sequel, which was the sequel is the part, all the park that they played around in the first novel and the first movie was nothing but a front because science is messy, science is difficult, and they had another island where they did all the real work. And that one had a lot of crazy stuff to it because, you know, it was just, like I said, it was messy and it was, you know, they wanted to show a nice, even the, you know, where you're sitting in the seats and they kind of go through and they show you the hatchery. Here are the quotes I'm making in the air.
Yeah.
You know, that was allegedly the real hatchery. No, that was just like, you know, once they tested out the eggs on island, secret island A, then they would bring the viable eggs over to the park island to, like, be hatched on the ride. But other than that, I mean, you know, even that book started to have kind of fall apart for me. So, like I said, Chris Pratt, awesome actor, might see it for that. I'm going to definitely wait for the reviews before I put my nose in the theater for that one.
Okay, so perhaps a good movie in Jurassic Park, or sorry, Jurassic World. And do you guys have anything else to add? Because I think we're really building towards a pretty big crescendo here, and I think we all know what we're talking about. Anything else to add before we blast off towards that one?
Unsheath your lightsaber. Go ahead, Tom.
Whoa. I mean,
all right,
I know
yeah.
You guys, but I don't know you that way.
Well, don't worry. My lightsaber has 3 or 4 blades, so it's sure to please anyone, whether they know me or not. But, right, weird, like, light claymores aside, and still creeping suspicions, which Brian does nothing to dispel every time I talk to him, aside, about hands being found and people being cloned and other silliness. I think Star Wars Episode 7 is going to be a highlight, maybe the highlight, at least for me, of 2015. What do you guys think?
It'll be memorable either way.
True. If they totally, like, clone, like, an evil Luke for each finger of his severed hand, then it'll be something I'll hate for the rest of my life.
I mean, is there any chance that any of us are going to love it? I mean, I know we talked about this in a previous episode, but, like, I feel like it's either they're either going to completely shit the bed, or it's just going to be like, okay, yeah, it was all right.
Man, at this point, just not offending me, just not going out of their way to make things worse would give me such a sense of relief that I might mistake it for love.
Well, you know, I think part of it is we all have, you know, there's a million, you know, there's 80 million fans out there, so to speak. And I think 85 million of them have a different idealized version of what they think Star Wars is. And there's just, you know, and we all put that Star Wars in our head to such a high pedestal. I think it's difficult for them to, you know, even hit the mark. If that makes any sense.
As a fan of the EU, I don't expect my version to ever be respected or popular, but watching Star Wars Rebels and seeing what is canonized now terrifies me.
And thus proves my point.
I think that that canonization of Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels was a hangover from Lucas. I hope that they get decanonized because Clone Wars was stupid and Rebels looks interesting, but I can't imagine it's worthy of being considered official canon. So I'm really hoping that this movie's a cut above. I'm hoping they realize they have so much to do that they make this just totally awesome. There's a million and one scenes that I've played in my head that if I saw half of them, well, yeah, a million and one, that if I saw one millionth of them would totally make this movie awesome for me. I just, it's theirs to screw up, but man, it's also theirs to just run away with. Like, the bar set's so low. How can they not run away with it?
Yeah, I mean, look, EU canon, Christmas specials, all that stuff aside, and this may be an oversimplification, I'm a huge, huge Star Trek fan, and so when J.J. Abrams took over that and did those movies, I enjoyed those movies, you know? I feel like if he does this, just at least sort of the same thing with these movies, I will be more than happy with them. I mean, especially after 1 through 3, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I do know what you mean. What do you guys think?
I just really hope these are story driven and not action flicks. And I don't think they're going to be. I think they're just going to be spectacle after spectacle after spectacle and no heart.
My main concern is that I get a definite vibe that this is kind of the old cast passing on the baton to the new cast. And I just have not really seen any genre films where that worked that well. I mean, Star Trek's a perfect example, right? Let's just throw Kirk off the bridge, you know. And when I say bridge, I don't mean the bridge, just a bridge on a desert planet that was in some black lot in California.
You're talking about Generations? Yeah, I mean, but they had a leg up because Next Generation was so popular that I think it was pretty accepted that when, you know, Jean-Luc and his crew took the reins, it was okay. But the problem is, all those, except for maybe Wrath of Khan and you know, one or two others, the Star Trek movies in general were just terrible. So it was a lot easier, I think, for them when they did the reboot to produce something that a lot of people were going to like. And, you know, to your point, Brian, you're right. They were just crazy action spectacles. But I'll take that any day over just, you know, the travesty that was 1 through 3 of Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree, Brian. So, Brian, are you optimistic or just kind of pessimistic at this point, would you say, if you had to pick one?
Well, I would say I'm optimistic because I really do think they're going to be better than 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
I'm not expecting to be kicked in the dick, so...
Such a high bar, Brian. Such a high bar.
I mean, I would think that under normal circumstances, it would be a really high-pressure gig. Like, hey, man, you got to make the next Star Wars movie. It's like, oh, my God. But then all you have to do is look at those pieces of crap, and you're like, yeah, I got this. I'll do this in my spare time.
Well, you say that, but aren't they planning, like, one a year from here on out?
Well, they're planning three movies. So a proper movie every 2 years, and then these, like, side movies with each of the characters, which I'm not really thrilled about.
Money grab.
Yeah, money grab. Like, I really don't think Boba Fett deserves his own... You know, I don't think any of the characters deserve a solo movie, to be truthful, unless it's, like, Luke.
Yeah, I think they're trying to steal from Marvel's playbook there.
They are. Well, it's Disney, you know, and that's probably their strategy across the board. I hope they don't oversaturate Star Wars, but in 2015, no chance of that happening. There's only Episode 7 coming out, and so for 2015, I'm pretty optimistic on the Star Wars front. I think that they are not going to kick us in the dick, as Brian said, and I don't think we can hope for anything more.
I'm going to wait to hear the early reviews, and as long as they have give a, you know, kind of a thumbs up, I'll jump on the wagon and see it.
Let me ask you.
I was going to say, there's no chance. Yeah, there's no chance I'm not seeing it, but you know, I'm hoping it's just a slap in the face and not a kick in the dick.
All right, final prediction, guys. what are the odds that we are going to be camping out for tickets as Brian and I did for episode one way back in like 1999?
Zero.
Zero.
Slim and none.
Yeah, zero. I'm just over that. Like, episode one got me so excited because it was the first Star Wars in forever. And, yeah. Not going to fucking happen now.
No, no way. I mean, there will be plenty of people that will do it, I'm sure, but...
And those people have already bought their ticket for Star Wars Celebration.
Right, right, right.
I will not be joining them.
Yeah, I don't even know if I'm... I mean, I probably would like to see that on opening day, but I'm just, like... After movies like The Hobbit have just completely disappointed me recently, I think I'm done being, like, a diehard fan, man. I'll be a lifelong fan, but a diehard, obsessive, wait-in-line fan, I don't know about that, man.
I mean, I say...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that I think that's a good show topic for the future. I mean, I think... And maybe it's just because we're getting older, but I feel like the diehard fan... is sort of going the way of the dodo. I think now it's just more mass appeal.
Yeah, well, let's see. Let's see when the time nears whether or not we cave in and become and behave like diehard fans. So that's a prediction we might leave. We're stating it at 0%. Let's see if that changes as the year progresses. 2015 is young. Star Wars is on its way toward the end of the year, or really at the end of the year. Much can change between now and then.
And I'd like to see if my theory about Star Wars holds true or not. Which is, there's three parts to it. A good Star Wars film has to have three things to it. It has to be equal parts awesome and equal parts cheese. And there has to be something that a 12-year-old boy can look at and go, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. And...
Yeah, they already have that.
I thought that was the Claymore lights.
Oh, yeah, that might be a two.
F1, F4 does not do it for me.
Oh, is that the name of the little thing?
It is now.
It is now.
the little droid volleyball. Okay.
Its official name is BB-8, but I think F1, F4 is much more fitting.
I hence call it now the volleyball droid.
Okay, F1, F4 is a FIFA reference, and yeah. I will wrap this up by letting our listeners know that they can, at any time in the brand new year that is 2015, listen to World Cup-level podcasting by subscribing to the Nerd Extravaganza podcast through iTunes or whatever podcatching software they happen to use, or they can check us out on a streaming service we like to call Stitcher.
They can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. They can make us part of their G+ circle, and they can join our Nerd Extravaganza HQ group on Facebook.
And you can check out all of our previous episodes at nerdstravaganza.com, and we boldly predict that you will enjoy them. And if you would like to send us some of your own predictions, go ahead and email us at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com. Please also don't forget to go over to YouTube and check out all of our other content, board game reviews, video game reviews, and movie reviews galore, which we also predict you will love.
And with all of that out of the way,
we're hoping that you will feel the force with us next week and come back.